the restaurants you love, the food you crave, and the people that make it all happen. We tell their stories on the Paper Trails Podcast with Albemarle Paper Supply.
What's going on, guys? How are you? And welcome back to the Paper Trails Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Caligiuri-Mitros, and we are on episode 10, season 3 of our podcast. I am very, very excited and thrilled to have Mike Pruitt, soon to be a good friend. So we're still getting to know each other. We met through some acquaintances, and we're helping out with, you know, some events that you're putting on. And so very, very excited to have a great conversation about business ownership, entrepreneurship. Mike is investor, entrepreneur, also very network. You know, we're finding out that we have a lot of mutual friends. And so I'm just thrilled. I'm thrilled and excited to, you know, just bring you guys another episode of somebody that we can learn from together, so that we can go apply these things, these success principles into our life. You know, whether you own a business or you're an employee or you're an executive, doesn't matter your background, let's apply these things to make sure that 2024 is a better year for us, for you and your family. So, Mike, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And so why don't we do this? Why don't we just go over maybe a little bit of your background, just for people maybe that don't know you, and then where you're from, you know, were you born here, were you from Charlotte? No, give us a little context as far as where you're from and how you maybe ended up maybe here where you're at.
All right, well, I was born in Baltimore. You know, so I'm the son of a Baltimore City police officer who had me 1 month after he turned 21, and my mother was 20, a bank teller.
Okay.
Largely raised by my grandparents until, you know, I went to school, who, you know, influenced me a great deal, you know, as it relates to baseball.
Okay.
Which, you know, we'll get to, is, you know, largely accredited for me ending up this path of where I got to Charlotte, and that was, you know, I was very fortunate to grow up, you know, and Cal Ripken and I were the same age.
Okay.
So we played summer ball together, we competed, we were arch rivals in high school.
Wow.
And, you know, I was very fortunate to be a really good player, and, you know, it was, you know, All-State, Maryland, you know, All-County where I grew up at, where Cal and I were, you know, teammates and competitors at. And that led me ultimately, my parents said, back then, you know, I didn't grow up rich. You know, I grew up in a what I would consider, you know, probably a lower middle class family today. And they said, if I want to go to college, I needed to get a scholarship.
Okay.
And I was fortunate to get a scholarship for baseball, which took me to Coastal Carolina University.
Okay.
Who had a top, you know, program, and they recruited me to come down there. And then at that school, I was very fortunate to play in back-to-back College World Series, where, you know, I was definitely a major contributor to the program and in my playing time. And then after graduating from Coastal, you know, I was offered a couple free agent contracts to continue my baseball career, but I realized I was not a good enough fielder, probably hitter, runner I was,
uh-huh.
But fielder I was, you know, I played multiple positions, and that's a difficult, you know, path to get to the majors back then.
Okay.
So I ended up finding a career path, which took me to 3M Corporation. And through a friend of a friend, you know, I was introduced to them. They put in a good word for me. I trained in their territory in the DC area, waiting for a territory to open for 3M. And one day I got the call that the Western North Carolina territory came available, and I could live anywhere from Greenville, South Carolina to Greensboro, North Carolina. And I picked Charlotte because on my dad's side of the family, my grandparents retired to Monroe.
Okay.
And I said, well, at least I know two people. And so they owned the corner store in Monroe, selling lunch meat and gas, and it's a convenience store.
Nice.
And so I ended up moving in with them.
And what year is that?
1986. I moved to Charlotte February 1st, 1986.
Okay.
I went home on February 14th and asked my girlfriend to marry me, and got married, and she got off the plane from our honeymoon in Charlotte in August of 1986. So 38 plus years,
yeah.
I've been in Charlotte now, and you have three kids, you know, all of them went through the school system, graduated college, two settled in Charlotte, one settled in Charlotte for a little bit, but now it's got her dream job in London. So But you know, Charlotte's home, and yeah. We have a house up in the mountains as well.
Nice.
That we spend a lot of time in the summers, and you know, I've been very fortunate. So,
quick question back to I'm not a big baseball guy, but I know mm-hmm. a little bit. I know who Cal Ripken Jr. is. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, could you know, and he's one of the greatest. Right?
He's in Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, did you know back then he was going to be this good? Like. You know, I guess I don't know baseball enough to know, like, you know, you could tell even at that age, you guys growing up, high school, middle school, all that, like, he's next level talent. Could you tell or no?
You know, it's funny you ask the question that way, because when I played with him, you know, I certainly knew he was a very talented guy, uh-huh. right? And I knew he was, you know, as good as anybody I was playing with or against, right? But I didn't look as me playing third and him playing short there and say he's like
gotcha.
That much better,
gotcha.
Right?
Than gotcha. Me.
But
you knew you could compete with him. You were absolutely. Like, hey, like yeah. I'm just as good as the guy next to me.
Right. Okay. And ironically, you know, we beat him both times, and you know, and we were arch rivals from different high schools. So yeah, the answer was, but you know, he was such a quality guy, and he was such a hard worker. And, you know, he was very determined, and ultimately he grew up to be 6'4", you know, so growing up, he, you know, he wasn't like that. He grew up,
yeah.
you know, over the period of time, so,
gotcha.
So 6'4", and, you know, just, he had great hands back then, and, you know, he was a great player for sure, but, you know, it's funny, I tell people to this day that probably the best player ever played with or against was a kid that played for me with me at Coastal, who got 10 years in the major leagues. You know, Mickey Brantley was his name, and then got another 20 years as hitting instructors in the major leagues.
Good friend.
And now his son, Mike Brantley, just retired this year. You know, he was a multi-year, you know, all-star, great hitter himself. So, you know, Mickey was you know, a really special talent, but. You know, baseball, you know, it's the old joke, you know, it's been very good to me, you know, because it provided me an opportunity to get a college degree.
Sure.
And four of my three roommates, we've stayed best friends for 40 years. In fact, we're going to Vegas the first week in May, first time we've ever gone on a trip together.
Nice.
And because two of them are turning 65 and have never been to Vegas.
Nice.
So one of the other buddies bought all four of us plane tickets, and so we're all, you know, gone. So it's, I've had, you know, three brothers, you know, and, you know, there's at least another three that we've stayed really close with as well. And you know, it's which really brings to part of what you've experienced with, you know, working with Lucia and Bree
yeah.
in our event that we put on, is they're all Coastal kids. So I have been fortunate over the last, you know, 20 years, Coastal has a program called the Wall Fellowship Program, which is their best and brightest in the business school.
Uh-huh.
And I've tried over the last 20 years, I've given many of them internships. Some of them, you know, they've been employed. And a lot of them, I always say to them when they start with me, I'm going to expose you to a lot. I'm too old to change what I'm going to do for a living. But once you kind of figure out through what I'm going to expose you to, and then I encourage you, if you want, go find an opportunity in the field that you've decided to pursue. And Lucia and Bree both are, you know, Wall Fellow, you know, very top of their class business school students.
Love it.
And in the case of Lucia, we created a business when she kind of figured out what she wanted to do called the F&B Social Club. Mm-hmm. And in Bree, she's, you know, working with my golf charity / business venture called 319 Golf Society, but helping on the event as well. Because the event is, you know, you're helping is regarding cancer.
Yep.
You know, my wife is now 11 years cancer free. Mark Allison, who is the co-founder with me, who you know as well.
Yep.
You know, his wife unfortunately lost her battle with cancer
yep.
7 or 8 years ago. And so Bree's brother-in-law is going through a cancer battle right now. And so cancer touches everybody. And
yep.
so Mark had the idea, we had the talent, and you know, I was financially willing to support it to create this, you know, new event called the Fort Cancer, which this year will be our third year. And, you know, it enabled us to give money back to local cancer charities, yeah. Not the big ones. They don't need our help. You know, well, I'm sure they would say they need our help, but, you know, the local ones in particular,
sure.
You know, keeping it local to Charlotte, which is our home.
Yep. I love it. I love it. Okay. And the reason I asked that, Mike, was, you know, it always kind of begs the question of whether, you know, it's like how, you know, are you born with talent? Is talent cultivated? Is it 50-50? Is it, you know, it's just kind of one of those questions that, you know, because there's definitely a hard work piece to it where, you know, people make the league and then in any professional, NBA, NFL, you know, and then some people stay on top because they don't get comfortable and they continue to get out of their comfort zone and work hard at their skill set. And then some people just kind of slack off and they have a year or two kind of in the majors. And so I just one of those questions. That's why I was curious just to ask about the Cal thing. But but anyway.
No, I think it's a great question. You know, I've said, you know, my entire life that, you know, of course I'm prejudiced towards baseball, but, you know, baseball is to me one of the greatest preparers for life and business, because if you have to figure out how to fail 2 out of 3 times to have any chance of success.
Yeah.
If you think about it, there's not a starting player who had any kind of length of career that hit more than 300 that's not in the Hall of Fame, right? So you got to figure that still, 2 out of every 3 times they go out with the intention of being successful, they fail at that particular moment.
Yeah.
And if you can't mentally get beyond that to the next at bat, to the next game, you'll never have any chance of being successful. So when I started my career with 3M in sales, I used to get up every morning, brush my teeth, look in the mirror and say, if I could be successful 1 out of 3 times a day, I'm going to the Hall of Fame. Mm. And so I methodically, you know, worked my buns off, you know, but I also realized 1 out of 3 didn't take offense if someone said, no, you know, my next door neighbor is my sales rep for your product. I'm not going to change.
Yep.
Get it. Understand. Don't worry about it. I'll keep you on the mailing list. Occasionally maybe something pop up.
Yeah.
And you move on. Right. And that's, to me, is dealing with, you know, failure. So look, I'd love to sit here and tell you, which would be a bold-faced lie, that everything I've done has worked. You know, but it's not the case. Yeah. You know, I've had some massive failures, you know, in my mind, you know, but, you know, I always look at the net is I've been fortunate to, you know, get ahead. So
how long did you work for 3M?
So I mean, the luckiest story in the world, and that is right place, right time. So I get to Charlotte territory and, you know, I called on all the data center managers because it was the data storage division. So, you know, back before your time, you know, whether it was First Union, now, you know, Wells Fargo or Bank of America, Duke Energy, they were all clients of mine. You know, they backed up in their big computer rooms data, and 3M was a leader in the space for those tapes. They weren't the only player, but they were a leader. Well, who would have known in 1989 that, you know, back then First Union, back then NCMB, back then BB&T would start buying up every bank and moving their data centers to Charlotte, North Carolina, where they were based out of. At the same time, IBM invented a new drive and 3M partnered with them on inventing their tape to back up that drive. So it went from, you used to back up on a round reel tape, they called it, that was this big, to a size of an 8-track cartridge tape that held 10 times the data of that one round reel tape. So 3M had an exclusive for that product with IBM for, I think, a year. And so they were eating tapes. I mean, I was the number one 3M rep in the United States in 1989. And because all these banks were being bought up, data centers being moved here, 3M, they were buying new IBM drives, 3M tapes to back up the data.
Yeah.
And so that is put me on the map. And then while I was sitting in Palm Springs, California, accepting the national sales, the guy sitting next to me offered to buy me and my territory from me, and my wife had just told me she was pregnant with our first child, and he gave me a deal that I couldn't refuse, which is I'll buy you cash, you know, where I could cash up. I'll take all the costs away from you, inventory, people, and move them to me. and I'll pay you a higher commission rate than you pay yourself because you don't have any of those costs. So I did that in 1990 at the age of 30, and I ended up staying with him for 2 years, and then handpicked, you know, a guy to take over my territory, stayed part-time for another year, and ended up going down the path that I've kind of followed since, you know, to this day.
Question, what you said you were kind of lucky in how kind of the chips fell. How much do you think luck plays a factor in somebody's success, if at all, if you believe it?
I do. I actually, yeah, it's funny because I say, you know, I'm always asked to give, you know, talk to the business school students at Coastal, and you know what I've said to them a lot over the last, you know, 25 years is, to me, when I look back at the success that I've had, you know, and I'm largely an investor, so. Putting that hat on, is there's four things. One is the fact that if you're going to be an investor, where I've had great experiences with is investing in or with proven investors. Because guys that are proven, and I think that correlates to a lot of different careers, they're relentless. You know, they will not lose money.
Sure.
So if you can somehow partner with them, invest in their fund, whatever, that's one thing. Secondly, and I think this is again relevant to whether it's restaurants or anything, if you're going to be a passive investor, then you need to find an executive leadership team, management team, that their interests are aligned with yours, where if you win, they win,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I always tell people, I don't want to make money off of your efforts, I want to make money with your efforts, right?
Yep.
The third piece where I've typically screwed up, and I think most do, is evaluating the risk. And that is, you know, I've experienced when things are really good, you tend to take more risk.
Yeah.
And things aren't always good all the time. So my losses, you know, I learn from them, but I look back and say, wow, why did I, you know, go out of my range with this, you know, take this kind of risk. And then the last piece to your question is luck. And that is, I don't ever want to believe it's blind luck, right? That you just, you know, like, putting red or black, right? That's blind luck.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's luck of being in the game when the game's going the right way. You know, and in my world of investing, there's up markets, there's down markets. You know, if you can be in the game and not on the sidelines in the up market, you can have a potential for outsized returns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you can weather then the downturns when they come, because they will come. Mm-hmm. And, so those are the four things that I preach to myself,
yeah,
and then others is, you know, when they're kind enough to ask for my advice.
Yeah, I think I used to never believe in luck. Mm-hmm. Like, just I was like, you know what, you have control of your own destiny. Mm-hmm. You know, you become relentless, you can make things happen. Which I still believe a lot of that. I mean, I think that is maybe, you know, the core of it. But I think maybe it's my maturity, but I think the more I'm involved in business or different businesses and I meet a bunch of different people, I'm like, you know what? There may be a small, you know, there may be a 5% slither of like, we kind of lucked out at kind of getting this operated at this time, you know what I mean? And so, I was curious to get your perspective on that.
No,
so, you know,
I think we're, anybody says otherwise is being a little naive.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, look, at the time I had a girlfriend who ultimately became my wife, right? To get a territory, you know, get out in the game, start making some money.
Yeah.
And, you know, who would have thought that the Western North Carolina territory would come open, and who would have thought that
Charlotte
the bank
would become the hub
of,
yeah,
banking and all that
I
stuff,
get it.
Right? So that was, you know, beyond my control, but you know, I got lucky there, and so, you know, but it's from that what you do with it and how you can bounce back, right? Because, you know, when I think back now that we're sitting here reflecting, you know, the money I made in 3M, the next deal I did it with my own father, who asked me to invest alongside of him in something, and lost all my money, you know, and so that could have really set me back, you know, and it was even worse that we were going to buy a house up on the north side, And at the 11th hour, we backed out. So I took that money and lost it.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, and then the next deal I did actually didn't really work well either. And then, but the guy who I did the deal with introduced me to another guy. And that deal, I ended up making life-changing money on. So you just, again, you just got to be in the game.
Yeah.
You got to keep swinging.
Let's talk a little bit about what you just said. I thought that was really good. You know, it's, I mean, you know, the saying is it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you just said, you know, that, you know, you did this, you lost money, but that guy referred you to this guy, and then you
right.
guys made life-changing money. Let's talk about the power of networking. Let's talk about, you know, I find it so interesting that we all know our sphere of influence, our association, our network, the people mm-hmm. that you kind of, your inner circle, even just, you know, I don't know, like the small little tentacles of relationships that you have, those heartstrings, I mean, can really lead to a lot of success or even maybe just wisdom in some points. But it's like, I feel like people don't intentionally network, you know, as much as they should. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, my opinion is I feel like we should be passing out cards, meeting people, buying coffees. I mean, I try intent, me personally, at least once a week, buy somebody lunch or coffee that maybe is in my space or maybe is not in my space, that maybe in the future we can, like, you know, do business together, or maybe might be my best friend. I don't know. Or maybe nothing might happen. But nothing bad happens from that.
No.
Nothing happens. My best friend could happen. I may do business together with somebody. But what are your thoughts on that? Like, would you recommend it? You know, especially, you know, maybe people that are kind of on the come up, you know, would you recommend people get uncomfortable, shoot their shot, ask people for coffee, for lunch, for, I mean, you know, get yourself involved, you know what I mean, and different, you know, things like that. So what are your thoughts on networking and meeting people and branching out?
Well, I think a couple things. I think for sure, you know, again, going back to, you know, my success, you know, it's interesting because, you know, the third deal, fourth deal that I did where, you know, there was even crazy money made, you know, I had built through that a core relationship with a handful of people who, you know, put up $5 million and made $80 million, right? So they're the ones who sort of came to me and said, man, we really appreciate what you did for us, and therefore, why don't you look for investments for us, right? Which kind of led me down the path I am. But the best thing that happened to me in that relationship was, look, if you'll put up $250,000, we'll put up $5 million, right? And so if you find opportunities, and you know, we can invest, you know, $5 million. If you'll put up $250,000, you know, we'll do it. But if you want to back us down to $1 million, we're okay with that too. Go build a business around us. So I literally, through a very small group of people, was able to build a network of 40 to 50
wow.
people.
Yep.
Because you, if you're in sales, you know the best time to make a sale is when you don't have to make a sale.
Yeah.
Right? So if you can say, hey, we're going to do this deal, and we're going to put $3 million in it, and it's, you know, if you don't want to do it, that's okay, because I got it covered, then, you know, that gives you more credibility that you've built, you know, this network. So I think it's a combination of a couple of things. One, I have not been the best, what I would say, and I think there's people a lot better than me, of just saying what you did. I'm going to get up this week with a desire, commitment, that I'm going to go meet, you know, a bunch of new people. I did that when I first started my
yeah.
career, right? And I think it was invaluable. Now, you know, I've got a core network of people, and they refer me to some people, and of course I do, and you build the network that way.
Sure.
But I don't do enough of anymore, you know, having that lunch or that coffee or that, you know, glass of wine.
Sure.
I do it more in the summer because I'm a member of a very exclusive club in the mountains.
Sure.
And so I've built a pretty strong network there over 21 years. But again, I do think it's invaluable building
sure.
relationships. I think that's, in fact, I think that's the key.
It's everything.
It's everything, right? Building relationships, building friendship. And I tell people all the time if the only time people hear from me is when I want something from them,
yeah.
that's not a relationship. That's a transactional
Dang.
Relationship, right? You know, they want to hear from me when I have a grandbaby. They want to hear from me when they had a grandbaby. They want to hear from me to God forbid, they had something negative happen in their life and, you know, show up. And so, and most of the things too, I always tell people that my biggest relationships were started when things didn't go well, how I reacted to when it didn't go well, not when it goes well. Everybody reacts positively, right? When you have something that, you know, gets punched in the stomach, you know, and in fact, one of the businesses I'm involved right now, you know, we got majorly punched in the stomachs in January, and we've been in, you know, dealing with that still to this day. And you, people want to know you're in the trenches fighting with them and, you know, trying to make it work.
Yeah. So. No, I love that. I love that. I mean, obviously networking played a big role in your career early on, you know, which obviously you suggest. But, you know, even transitioning to the attitude subject, I love that. I read a book many years ago, Attitude is Everything, and it talks about your reaction, your perspective on every, your attitude on everything. And, you know, the, you know, I've heard things like 98% of success is attitude. Mm-hmm. And then 2% is kind of details. It's like, how do you think about, how do you, you know, what is your perspective on, you know, there's a video that I love watching. Jocko Willink is a Navy SEAL who is now kind of a business coach, but he has a very viral video that, you know, he said one of his subordinates when he was in the SEALs and he was overseas in Afghanistan, anytime anything bad would happen, he would just say, good. You know, oh, we didn't get funded for the new project? Good. Oh, we didn't get this? Good. And so it's just, that was his perspective. Good. Something good will happen from everything, you know, whether it's you see it right now or you, you know, in the future, something good will happen. He believes it. And I was like, you know what? What a good perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, at first we don't see it, but, you know, that door may lead to something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, look, I got an early lesson in that. I remember when I first started my territory. You know, you got to remember now, it was a glorified commission sales job. My first year of marriage, I worked every day but four in the first year. I made $16,000 net, right? So, but in about my second year, third year, I had found a company here in town that was a software developer called Broadway and Seymour for banks. Okay. And so they were buying a lot of tapes from me. And I was shipping tapes all over the country to little small regional banks because they were doing software. They were shipping their software updates out on the tapes. You know, and occasionally things screwed up, right? You ship it to the wrong address or something happened, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we, you know, get our butt handed to us and how, so, you know, how we would react to it. So, you know, one of those things as a sales rep, you know, in the business you're in, she calls me in one day and says, you know, our bosses, the owners of the firm, recognize how much money we're spending on these tapes and stuff, and they've asked me now to put it out for bid. And so I just want you to know that, you know, we're putting it out for bid.
Yeah.
Well, your heart sank, right?
Yeah.
You said, okay, I know I was, you know, treating them fairly.
Yes.
But you're going to get a cold call from, you know, another rep's going to get a call and say, here's how much tape, eyes are going to drop, say how much money they're spending.
Yeah.
And you didn't have the business. So yeah, obviously I think your pencil is going to be sharp.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget. I put my bid in, you know, worked with 3M National Accounts, made sure we did the best possible pricing.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget. She called me in and said, I just want you to know, out of 15 people that bid, you were the sixth highest. And I'm like, oh my God. I mean, first of all, I couldn't even imagine how many other people could bid that would be that much lower. She goes, but I convinced the owners of the firm to go with you. And I said, I was just shell shocked. And she goes, because Mike, we always appreciate the team internally, they're responsible for this project, how you react when things don't go well.
Love it.
And I'm like,
what a story.
Right. So that was
a story.
At 29 years old, when you're sitting there watching potentially, you know, a major account, money in your pocket, go out the window, you know, you get a life lesson that says, it's, you know, I went back and told my team, I owe this to you because you step up when things don't go right to make them right. Mm-hmm. And it's your attitude on the phone, customer service, that, you know, makes it all worthwhile. So I try hard to keep my cool and, you know, and try to deal with it in the best way possible and recognize, going back to the old baseball saying, that things are going to happen bad, they're going to fail, whatever. It's how you deal with it. It gives you the opportunity to stay in the game and, you know, benefit on the other side.
Love that. Love that. Oh my gosh, what a story. I feel like that's, you know, the epitome of not only teamwork, camaraderie, attitude, but relationship building. I mean, they know you. They're comfortable with you and your business and your team and your systems. And so, wow, that's powerful. I love that.
Yeah, look, and again, back then, we were all young. They were young. The people I dealt with at this firm were young, and they were getting married and having kids and me. So it was like, you know, there was this camaraderie, to your point, built. And it's really interesting how life comes full circle, because I used to call on a gentleman by the name of Austin Adams, who was the head of First Union's, you know, data center. And he ended up, you know, through the mergers, he went and did JP Morgan Chase. Well, we both ended up being members at my club in the mountains, so I reconnected a relationship that I had totally lost for 20 years, right? You know, when I walked in one day, he was Mike, and I'm like, yeah, Austin, yeah. And so, so you just, you know, again, the other thing is too, I mean, I'm a big community person, so Charlotte's been, my home. It's going to stay my home, you know. My daughter just had our first grandchild. She lives here.
Congratulations.
So this is our, you know, home. And, you know, I think part of, you know, what I've learned in life's lessons is people that I admire and respect is, you know, you got to take care of your community and your home. And
I agree.
For people who, you know, potentially are on hard times or dealing with pain and issues, that's... And the restaurant space, you know, because of my investment, you know, in past investments and current business in it, you know, watching what happened to COVID, you know, it was heartbreaking.
It's tough.
I mean, I watched, you know, who I thought were great restaurateurs lose their restaurants, and how painful that is, not only because you lose your investment. We all know when you close a restaurant, there's little to no value you're going to get, you know, from what's in that restaurant, you know, even though you spent a lot of money to open it, and then, you know, to lose your savings and your family's income and all that. It's a tough, tough, you know, world that you watch happen and you want to help. And so
let's talk a little bit about that. What are some things that you've seen successful restaurateurs, operators do? Some common traits. Now, obviously, restaurants, because what we know when it's our industry, but I mean, it could be any jockey that you're betting on, right? I mean, I think a lot of times you're more so betting on the jockey than the actual horse. But I mean, the horse matters, the vehicle and making money matters for sure. Mm-hmm. But what are some common things that you've seen as far as traits, habits? You know, is there anything like that you can kind of glean on and see, you know what, like outside of COVID, outside of external, you know, other than I'll just, you know, normal times, what are some things that people can do, operators that, you know, there may be a small business owner watching this right now that may not even be there, you know, he might own a gutter business or a pressure washing company. What are some things that you've seen in your experience that people have done over and over that are proven, you know what, if you know your numbers, if, you know how they say, you know, sales, if you have enough sales, you can kind of, you know, make mistakes, but still continue to, you know, what are some things that you've seen that, you know, you can glean on that you can, you know, shed some light on?
Well, I mean, I'd love to tell you that, I know some of the best operators of restaurants in this town, you know, some of what you mentioned you had on your show before.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that they, you know, it depends, right? I think a couple things. One, I think there's two types of things that you see people successful. That is, they identify a unique opportunity in a particular category that this market hasn't seen before, and they get their first to market, right?
Okay.
But for that to be successful, they have to really have their arms around, you know, everything, right? Operations, people, you know, cost of goods, you know, great location. You know, I think some of the things from some of the other great operators I've learned over the years, I mean, you can have the best burger around, but still people aren't going to drive 5 miles for it, right? They're not going to pass four other burger places if they have an interest in a burger for that particular meal. if they're in that area, they may go out of their way to stop there, but they're not. So you can't put it in a remote location where it may not work, you know, and get enough revenue because gotcha. To that point. The white tablecloth guys, you know, I think it's got to be an amazing experience, right? They're focused on experience, something that you wouldn't necessarily ever cook at home, you know, which is what draws you out of your house to go there, right? Versus cooking it yourself. The staff is incredibly important, right? And I mean, my wife and I, you know, kind of are one of our go-to places for special occasions is Barrington's. We've had the same lady wait on us there for 15, 20 years.
Wow.
They know your name when you walk through the door. That experience makes it feel incredibly special. And you know you're going to get something very unique that you wouldn't even have thought of in your wildest dreams to cook, right? So that's an experience. I think, you know, look, feel, cleanliness, you know, attention to detail, see the owner, you know, walking around, you know, talking to people, building rapport. I mean, the old saying, you know, it's the toughest thing is to go from one restaurant to two, especially if you're, you know, a chef-driven concept, because people come to expect you to cook their meal for them.
Yeah.
And you can't be two places at one time. So I've seen, unfortunately, that cause failure in restaurants where guy builds a really successful one and then thinks, well, man, if I had two of them, I could do it. That's the hardest thing, to go from one to two if you're expected. And like I say, I think the guy, you know, from Barrington's is, you know, has done that well because he didn't do it that way. He said, I'm going to groom this chef and then I'm going to back him to go open his own.
Gotcha.
And I'm going to look after him versus I'm not going to go cook over there. You know, I'm going to back him. So, but, you know, and guys like, you know, you mentioned John Dressler, who we're talking about. You know, he grew up, you know, working in very successful chains, moved around. And so, to me, he's a great operator, right? And Frank Schiavelli is a great operator. You know, here, Frank's a friend of mine, too. Golf, he's probably one of the best, you know, Tommy Hager and those guys are great operators, and Brad, because they took it, you know, multiple places, multiple geographies, you know, Dennis Thompson, I'm sorry, from Firebirds, you know, they're all great operators, right? Where they've built systems and people and figured out how to motivate those people and compensate them and give them growth paths of opportunities. Mm. That's, to me, it's unbelievable, right? When you can do that. And to your point, that translates multiple types of businesses. But look, the restaurant's a hard business.
Yeah, it is.
It is a very hard business. I mean, old Tommy Hager, to give him credit, he told me one time, he goes, you know, I take a product, whether it's a burger, whatever, and say, I want to make the best one of these, and this is what my costs are, and this is what I need to sell it for in order to be profitable. And if I can't sell it for that and be profitable, then I better figure out how to do something different. Mm. Because, you know, you need to make money. I mean, you need people to pay your supply bills, you need people to pay the rent, you need people to pay matching FICA and all that stuff. So it's got to be profitable. And certainly get a return on your investment, because it's getting more and more expensive to open a restaurant.
It is.
So,
yeah, I mean, listen, I thought that was powerful. You know, I think the one thing, Mike, that I've learned over the last 15 years of running our business and going from just my cousin and I to, you know, 18 employees and all that, it's just, you do have to have a good team.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I mean, you mentioned that, having the people in place, the processes, the team, the staff, training, you know, preparing, planning. I mean, I think the best business owners are the ones that look ahead, prepare, what's coming up, you know, how can we, you know, increase business in the summertime when it's a little slower for restaurants? What can we, you know, do we need to do a little more marketing? Do we not? You know, I mean, these are all different things that, like, you're trying to attack at every level. And so, yeah, I mean, in the beginning, maybe you can do it by yourself, but at some point, if you want to scale anything, you got to find right people.
Well, you know, one of the most successful businesses that I ever saw, again, 25 years ago when I was, you know, I sold my company to a guy in Richmond, and then I stayed on his board. And he was considering selling to another company, and we went and visited him. And this company, I mean, you could have ate off the floor. I mean, it was like, it was a machine. And I remember something the owner of that business told me, who was an ex-West Point guy, you know, military guy. And he said, the world's made up of average people. And my job is to put systems and procedures and policies in place to take average people and make them slightly above average.
Wow.
I don't need them to be rock stars. I just need them to be slightly above average. And that's how we've built an incredibly successful team. And occasionally we do find a rock star. And when you do, you reward them and you incentivize them and you make him into a leader as well. And so I do think that it's a special breed of people. By the way, that's not me, right? So I think one of the things I learned on early in my life, I'm not an operator. I don't want to manage people. I have great empathy. I have great, you know, leadership skills. But there's the old saying, there's teachers and there's doers. And I'm a doer. I get up every day, you know, determined to do better today than I did yesterday, and do things that benefit, you know, myself, my family, the people around me, and the like. But I'm not the greatest teacher. You know, where I've had success, like I've had two people that work for me for more than 15 years, is they're self-motivated. They understand the task. They understand what needs to happen. They are amazing at it. They make me, you know, take that pressure away from me and make what I'm doing every day.
Yeah.
They free me up to do the things that we can make money, so they have the opportunity they have, and we as a company have the opportunity we have. But I keep the staff very small, and, you know, people are a lot smarter than me around me, and then give them the opportunities and then really get excited. I mean, I think one of the young men that you met working for me when you first came around here a few weeks ago, Sam, you know, he left 2 weeks ago because he couldn't have found a better dream opportunity that, to his credit, I asked him to go meet with him because he knew him about a potential investment opportunity. And in meeting with him, he found a job opportunity. And I couldn't be happier. Mm-hmm. I couldn't be more proud that he's getting married soon, found the right opportunity for him. You know, me getting him to Charlotte for the job and give him an exposure.
The whole thing, yeah.
Right. It landed for him, and I couldn't be happier. So
I think the other thing that, you know, I really, you're talking about it, and it's playing through my mind, is I think it's important to be self-aware, like knowing what you're good at, like what are your strengths, what are you not good at.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important. I think sometimes, like, maybe we can be delusional as far as like what we're good at, you know, and it's like, you know what? It's okay. Like, you can't be awesome at everything. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a deal breaker if you're not the most organized person. Hire somebody that's organized, right? And now you got a good team. I mean, for us, my cousin and I are not very detailed centric. And so for our first, I don't know, from Sally has worked for us for maybe 9 years. And so she's in her early 60s, Chapel Hill grad, you know, her family owned a lumber company, $20 million in revenue, sold it back in the late 90s. And she was working, you know, so we found her and she hopped on board. And you know what? She put structure in 9 years ago. She has seen such a progression in our company. And it's like, you know what? I needed her.
Yeah.
Like, she filled a gap that I needed. And now we're next level. Now we're able to operate at another level and add 150 clients every year for the last 4 or 5 years. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, like, so, but I know what I'm not good at. I'm okay with it. It's right. Fine. You know right. What I mean? It doesn't hurt my ego, you know, to know that I'm not good at this area, but I know what I am good at. So right. You said that about what you're good at, what you're not. It kind of just, I think it's important for people to hear that.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, one of my mentors, who was a professor at Coastal when I graduated, back then, Coastal was so small that you literally had a teacher, professor sponsor you at graduation. So he was my sponsor. And he told me something that I think is so true even to this day. In fact, yesterday was his birthday. I texted him. And he's retiring. But he said, Mike, figure out what you're good at in business and become the best at it you can possibly be.
Yeah.
And all the other areas of business, learn enough about it so no one can pull the wool over your eyes.
Mm.
And so it's like accounting is a perfect example. You know, I'm involved in a lot of investments. I can read a financial statement. I can understand a financial statement. I can ask really good questions about it. But would I want to be the guy that sit there and put the financial statement together? No, right?
Yeah.
But the person I'm dealing with on the other end knows that I know enough about it, they can't pull the wool over my eyes, right? If they want to talk about marketing, you know, I'm not a great marketer, I'm more of a salesperson, but I can say what I think is a good marketing plan, right? Or ask questions about it, you know, and things like that. So, you know, warehousing, logistics, things, you know, that I've experienced over the years, you know, I know enough to ask good questions, but it's not what I'm really good at.
Love it. Okay, let's wrap up, Mike. Last piece of advice, if you, you know, could give some advice to somebody out there that wants to win, that wants to become successful, that wants to have some financial stability, some financial independence, something, you know, to be able to, you know, make sure that their kids, you know, have a better future. What are some thoughts, suggestions, a quote, you know, anything, personal development, improvement, progress? What are some things that you really wish upon somebody? Obviously, you're a big community guy, and you know our podcast is kind of, you know, in this area. And so, what are your thoughts? What would you recommend to some people to make sure that this year is better than last year? What are some things that they can do? Some tangible things they can do to make that happen?
Well, I think you know the advice that I've given even my kids, or like I say, the kids that have come through here from Coastal, is the sooner that you can find something that gets you excited, that you say, because think about it, you're gonna work more hours than you're gonna spend with your family in a lot of cases, all the things you gotta do to be successful. So the faster you can figure out something that you can get excited by, get passionate by, the better. Then, if you're lucky, and I even, you know, I was financially lucky to be able to say this to my kids, but if you're lucky, find out someone in that space who is the best,
yes,
you think is the best, and say, I will come work for you even if it's free. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully that's not the case, but you know, you can.
Sure.
And learn from them, right? Find a mentor, find somebody. Never stop investing in yourself, right? Whether you brought up personal development, you brought up a lot of things. You gotta invest in yourself. You gotta never stop learning. You gotta be committed to be the best, and find the space that you think is the most fun and interesting and you can get passionate about. But also it's gotta be, you gotta evaluate the opportunity, right? And you gotta be realistic, right? If you say to this opportunity, I wanna be able to make, I'm just making up a number, $200,000 a year, right? But you look at the opportunity and you ask people in the industry, who do you think is the best in this industry, how much they're making? And if they say $150,000, then that, you gotta realize, either you're gonna have to be way above the best of anybody, or maybe that particular industry is not the best opportunity,
sure,
for you to be passionate about, right? And so find an industry where that you have the upside opportunity, because the worst thing in life is not living, it's the hardest thing in life to deal with if you don't live up to your own expectations for yourself, right?
Yep.
So create an environment where you have the ability for your own expectations to be met if you put the time, energy, and effort into it. And so to me, that's really the advice to give to anyone, right? And look, there's so many roles that makes the world go round, right? And everybody has different expectations. And as long as you can, as an owner of a business, help those people meet their own expectations, you're gonna be successful. And you know, you as a person, you know, you meet your own internal expectations for yourself, you know, then I think if you can combine those two things, then you have a real chance of being successful business, and the people working with you have a chance to be successful in their own, you know, expectations for themselves and their family. And always recognize you're gonna get punched in the gut sooner or later, and when you do, know that there's some people around you, right? They can help you out, right? That you can trust, admire. I think you should always have somebody in your life that you look up to, that you can,
100%,
you know, reach out to keep raising that bar of your expectations of yourself. But you know, it's nothing easy about it, right? You gotta hard work. You gotta put the time in and energy. It's really hard when people say it's a, you know, you have to have balance. It's really hard to have balance, you know, in life, especially when you're young. You know, if something's gonna suffer, you know, and you gotta manage as best you can, but, you know, communication as you do it is the key, you know, and finding a partner, you know, in your life that, matches your expectations that, you know, and supports you and what you're trying to accomplish. And likewise, you have the ability to support them and their with their efforts to do. And but there's no easy answers.
Yeah.
No. I mean, and as you get, I think as you get older, like myself, you realize more than ever, time is your most valuable asset.
Yeah.
And if you're going to put the time into something, make sure it's something that's worthy of your time.
I love that. I mean, there's so much good that you just said right now. I mean, one thing that you said that I absolutely loved, you know, there's a saying that nothing happens until someone gets excited. Yeah. I love that, right? Enthusiasm is contagious. Excitement is contagious. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was very powerful. Another thing, you know, that you said that I thought was powerful was, you know, especially when you're young, you know, having the whole balance thing sometimes is, not, especially if you want to accomplish something big, right? There will be, you will be imbalanced at a time frame, a period where there will be imbalance so that later on you will have imbalance in a good way. You'll have more time, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so I think those are just two like things that you just said that I was like, wow, like that's very powerful.
And don't underestimate the little things, right? And that is in that period where you're imbalanced. Especially in today's world of, you know, social media, cell phones and all that, just, I can't tell you how many times, and I learned this from somebody else, I sit on a plane, I go through my phone and text people or send a little email, so when I land, it goes out to them, that just the little things that they'll know, we haven't seen each other in 6 months, don't think I haven't forgot you,
just wanna say
whatever,
hello.
Just want to say hello, to keep people close to you when it's in balance.
Yeah.
Because I was just thinking about the other day, my one roommate that I'm going, who was actually my roommate in the room that I lived in, you know, who had, you know, he went through a, you know, had to get a liver transplant because he had cancer liver and all that about 6 years ago. His daughter just got married. I realized that was the first time I saw him in 18 months. It almost floored myself. And, but he goes, you know, I've never felt like it's been 18 months because you always reach out, you always ask about me, always checking in.
Good.
And that's the things I think you learn as you get older. You know, don't forget the little things. It's not just the big things that, you know, your friends expect from you or your family. Just stay in touch. Let them know you always care. Let them know you're always going to be there if you need, if you're needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he had his liver transplant, he knew I was sitting in the hospital room when he came out. He, you know, he needed to get away for 2 weeks to recover. I sent him and his daughter, who was acting as a, she's a nurse, you know, stayed at my place for 2 weeks to, you know, just get away from the world and, you know, and, you know, recover. You know, so it's all, not always the big things, it's the little things too. So.
Love it. Mike, this is awesome.
No,
this was
pleasure.
Awesome.
Thank you for thinking of me and inviting me.
Absolutely. And, absolutely tremendous episode. I thought it was awesome. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Episode 10, season 3 in the books, Mike Pruitt. And so if you guys want to support, you know, I know Mike is putting together Fork Cancer. It's going to be in September of 2024. And so we're helping out in, you know, in different ways as well. And so, you know, Mark, Chef Mark Allison, who was, you know, on our podcast, I think a couple seasons ago, you guys know him. And so obviously, you know, you're in the community, you're helping, you know, a lot of respect from me. And obviously you have a lot of relationships. And so wish you guys nothing but the best.
Same.
And, you know, continued, you know, support from us. And so anyway, good to see you guys. Appreciate you guys logging in and plugging in and watching us, whether it's through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. You know, like, subscribe, share if you guys got some value from this episode, and we'll see you guys in the next episode.
The restaurants you love, the food you crave, and the people that make it all happen. We tell their stories on the Paper Trails Podcast with Albemarle Paper Supply.